Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics. Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God in the movies we watch. And this episode, we're going to be talking about one of the best movies in the early 2000s, Gladiator. And this was recommended by a guy from my work, Bethany, Jeremy, and he's been telling me, hey, you should review this movie for the last like year that I've been doing this podcast. And so I figured, let's do it, finally.
He's a man with fine taste.
Yeah, he is. So you want to get into the description of the movie before we begin our ratings of the movie?
So our guy Maximus is a Roman general. He's very close to the emperor, who is Marcus Aurelius. Aurelius wants Maximus to lead after him instead of his son Commodus, because he thinks that Maximus is going to be better for Rome. But Commodus overhears this, and he kills his own father, and then he tries to kill Maximus, who escapes, of course, but he does kill Maximus's wife and son. And
jerk.
Yeah. Kind of rude. And then Maximus, he is enslaved, and he has to fight in the gladiator rings. After some things happen, Commodus and Maximus fight in the gladiator ring, and Maximus wins, but Commodus, like, knifed him before the fight. So Maximus also dies, but before he does, he gives a speech encouraging the people of Rome to make Rome great again.
Wow, a Trump reference. I like it. Make Rome great again.
Except he was actually encouraging them to make it a real democracy.
Right. Anyways, so yeah, let's get into the ratings. So on the show, we have our rating system. Water, which means bad. Soda, which means good. And then slushy is amazing. So Bethany, where do you gonna rate this movie? I'm gonna say water, isn't it? It's water for you.
I don't think you understand the depth of my passion for this movie.
Why is this movie so passionate for you? Why do you love it so much?
Honestly, I can't remember what first struck me about it, but I watched it pretty soon after it came out.
I'm sure you were entertained. Are you not entertained?
Well, I loved the fight between absolute good and absolute evil, because we have a true good guy and a true bad guy.
Right.
And the true good guy, like, cares so much about his family.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why you like it, is because they weren't trying to make Commodus.
Commode.
They weren't trying to make him like, oh, look, he's had hardships, and this is why he's evil.
Oh, he's conflicted. No, he's evil. Yeah, I do like that, and I love the soundtrack. I actually know the soundtrack better than the movie. I've listened to it so many times, especially Elysium and Now We Are Free. Oh, like, transcendental music right there.
Yeah, I mean, between the soundtrack and the quotes of this movie and just the overarching plot and narrative, it is a really good movie.
Yeah. Do you remember the DVD clubs of the 2000s?
I was 10 in the early 2000s. What do you mean, well, DVD club?
You would have graduated in 2009.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I graduated in 2007, and one of the first things I did when I started making money was I joined a DVD club, which is... It was one of the first subscription things that I'd ever seen. And you paid a certain amount every month, and they would send you these DVDs. And I did it for the free DVDs.
So this wasn't Netflix?
No, it was something else.
I don't miss the Netflix days where they had DVDs and you just get one and they send you one in the mail. Gosh, those days sucked.
It's I like, missed the we feel can of never those go back to that. Sleeves though,
and
those
that was
soft little sleeves. But and that was came in.
That was revolutionary back then. Now it's like, ugh.
Yeah. But anyways, I joined this DVD club just so that I could get three movies that I really loved, and those were Braveheart, The Patriot, and Gladiator.
We'll have to do Braveheart and Patriot sometime because those two are really good movies.
So you're saying I have good taste?
Yes, you have good taste. Not in TV shows most of the time, but movies you do, which is why this is a movie podcast, not a TV show podcast, or otherwise we'd be watching Doctor Who. And I will give you, though, like Psych, since we've been watching that, that has been a really good.
It's amazing. Psych is hilarious.
It takes probably about 10 episodes to get the humor of, I would say. I mean, it really does. Like, at least for me, it took quite a bit of time to get the humor of it.
Oh, I got it pretty fast because...
Well, yeah, that's because you're different.
Because I'm silly.
Yeah. I'm more of a let's have the meth head or like the teacher cook meth to make millions of dollars kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm more of the let's follow the time traveling alien through space and time.
Anyways, so... yeah, so give us the reasons why you really like this movie. The soundtrack.
I like that there's a combination of really good action and thought-provoking things. Mm. So it's not just a mindless action fic, but it's also not just a slow drama. It takes the best of both worlds and smooshes them together.
Mm, yeah, I would agree because I do like the drama part, but the action's also good. Because either there's, the Michael Bay films like Transformers and crap, and it's just stuff's blowing up all the time.
Right.
And the characters are just meh. And then you have other stuff that's just drama, but there's no blowy stuff up. And this does a really good job with balancing those two things out.
Yeah, it totally does.
So what would you rate it? I guess a slushie?
I would rate it as a slushy. Sorry, I was distracted because you brought up Michael Bay, and I just learned something weird about Michael Bay.
And you had to feel like you had to type it into the computer to...
To fact check myself. Do you want to know what his first directorial thing was?
What?
He did the very first commercial for the Got Milk campaign.
No way.
Yeah, he did.
Well, you know what would have made that better?
What?
It's like after the person drank the milk, if it would have exploded. not the person, but the milk carton. You got milk and the boom.
I mean, either way, yeah. That'd be amazing.
That would have been a pretty sick commercial in my mind. I rate this a slushy, probably a blue slushy for sure, because let's be honest. We don't like seeing CGI stuff anymore. Like, no one's like, oh boy, here we go, CGI. It's in everything. And what this movie has, it has real tigers, which is pretty awesome. I mean, I'm sure there is a few scenes where the tigers were CGI'd when they're biting someone's head off or something. But for the most part, there are real tigers in this movie, which... That's pretty cool. I miss the Homeward Bound days and the days where they actually trained animals to be in movies. Now it's like, oh, we gotta preserve the animals. They don't like it.
Or even just having like a real animal. Like there was an episode of Psych that has a cat.
Yeah.
And the cat was not trained. There was only like two cats available where they were filming. And so they got one of them.
Yeah. And it's like now if they have a dog in a movie, it's like, we got to CGI them. Can't make the dog real.
Well, and then.
Gonna hurt the dog's feelings if we put him to work.
And like I said, like the cat wasn't even trained. They just let the cat do its thing. It didn't know any tricks. And it was still so much better than having a CGI animal in there.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing I really like. I mean, like we talked about this already, but the storyline, the fight scenes, and my personal favorite is the great quotes. And I actually have a really fun fact about the quotes of this movie or the script of this movie in a few minutes. But there's a few great quotes. So what you do in this life echoes in eternity. I thought that was a really good quote. Yeah. And then obviously the most famous quote out of this whole thing is, are you not entertained? And then one thing I wanted to ask, but Maximus, this was the only like flaw I saw in the movie, you know, mm-hmm. the only like plot hole. And maybe you can explain this for me. Why didn't Maximus just say yes to Caesar right then and there, rather than be like, no, I want to go back to my family and just be done with all of this. I don't want to like, you know, help Rome be a democracy and make it a better place. Why didn't you just say, hey, okay, cool, I'll do that. I'm going to bring my family to Rome, and then that way we can just rule and like create a democracy. Why didn't he just do that? Why did he just be like, no, I'm going to go back to my family, yo?
Question back to you. Why don't you want to be promoted at work?
Because I don't want to be in leadership. Because it sounds so horrible.
Huh. Interesting. Maybe that applies here. He was a homebody.
Think if he knew that the stupid little whiny butt son would have killed his wife and kid, he would have said yes?
100%.
Nah, I'm not going to do that. I saw time and, yeah, I want to kill this dude for killing my family. Kind of thing. Yeah.
I really can't blame him for choosing what he did. I think he chose well.
Still, I mean, you say no to the emperor or Caesar. I mean, there's bound to be consequences if you do that. Or even, like, he knew. So, okay, what about this, though? He knew Commodus was going to take the place of Caesar after he killed Caesar.
Right.
And he's like, hey, you know, I need to know we're good. This is my one-time offer. And I mean, I get it. The guy was saying, hey, you need to stick with me and my allegiance here, and you can't go back to your family. But he knew, do you think he knew to some degree that he knew? I mean, the dude was a sleazeball.
I think he hoped he would be better.
And I don't know, he should have picked up, like, maybe it's like, you know, if I say no to this guy, he'd kill my family. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Do you think he, Commodus played it off that well that he was like, oh, yeah, you know, you say no to me, it's fine. We're cool. Go back to your doing whatever.
Well, I mean, if we're thinking about things in real life and not just movie style, you always think the best of people. I mean, like, we can be cynical, but we do tend not to believe that we are surrounded by
a bunch of
narcissistic, insane, psychopath murderers.
Right.
So I think he was probably assuming, yeah, he's kind of a sleazeball, but maybe he'll do all right as a ruler because he's surrounded by all these great advisors.
Yeah, you would think, but yeah, he made a wrong move there, so... Anyways, yeah, that was my only thing. I guess I can understand not wanting to be in leadership because of me. I don't want to be in leadership myself. So,
yeah.
So, anyways, so we're going to go into the fun facts part of the show. So, let's hopefully we don't bring up the same fun facts. It's always my fear when we bring up the same things. I actually got an extra one just to make sure.
All good right. Job. I have like three extras.
Oh, three? Okay, that's sweet.
Okay, so this movie is vaguely based on a true story. I guess you could say it's inspired by historical events. So Commodus, he really was an emperor of Rome.
He actually, I knew you were going to go with the history side of this.
Oh, you're counting on that.
So I didn't pick any history kind of stuff because I knew based on like who you are, you really like the history.
I do have a lot of modern facts though too. But anyways, so he was a real emperor. He really was a sleazeball. And he was actually killed by his personal trainer, Narcissus. Who
he also, if I remember correctly, when I was reading up on it, that he actually stabbed his opponents in the back before he fought them too.
Commodus. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really did that. So Narcissus, he actually was hired by the senators to assassinate the emperor. Mm-hmm. They actually kept trying to kill him.
So there was a Bonhoeffer. Narcissus was like the Bonhoeffer of the Nazi Germany, right?
You mean Commodus.
Well, yeah, Commodus was like...
Sorry, yeah. No, you were right. You were right.
Yeah.
But no, get this. So Commodus's mistress was a gal named Marcia, and Marcia poisoned his wine, but the wine didn't work. So Narcissus went into Commodus's room, and then he strangled him.
Mm. In his sleep, I take it?
Either in his bathtub or his bed. Apparently, sources vary.
Mm. I'm going to guess the bed, because, yeah, I don't know. It just, that seems easier than the bathtub. Just saying. All right, so... My fun fact's really kind of funny because I talked about how there is like really great quotes in this movie and how I love the quotes. And Crowe himself, Russell Crowe, was not a fan of the script. And Crowe was so unhappy. Wait, did you have this one? You had this one, didn't you? I see it on your face.
That's okay. I have more.
So Crowe was so unhappy with the script during the production that he would frequently walk off the set and initially refused to say the famous line, "I will have my vengeance in this life or in the next." And then Crowe later said to the screenwriter, William Nicholson, "Your lines are garbage, but I'm the greatest actor in the world, and I can even make garbage sound good." And then I guess the screenwriter of the movie modestly said later, in Russell Crowe's defense, "My lines were garbage," which... I didn't think they were garbage. Like, I thought
of this was ad-libbed. Like, when Commodus says, "Am I not merciful?" That was actually an ad-lib.
Like, it wasn't in the screen.
It wasn't in the script. There were only 32 pages of script when they first started shooting.
Hmm.
There was not a lot.
Holy cow. 32?
Yeah.
When I'm listening to the Psych episodes... They're saying, like, the one writer on there is like, "Yeah, I had like 57 pages worth of script, and that was for a 40-minute show."
A lot.
Versus a 3-hour show.
A lot was ad-libbed on the spot. Like, when Maximus is describing his home to Marcus Aurelius, Crowe is actually describing his own home in Australia.
These actors are like, you know what? But isn't that amazing? Because, I mean, to bring back Psych again, like, that show's so good because there was a little bit of liberty to kind of like say your own lines in it. And that's in a sense, like, these actors were able to do that, and it actually made the movie better. So sometimes screenwriters, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, I'm just saying. Like, read a book, you know?
Read a book, guys. So, another history one I have is they couldn't make this film too historically accurate because people would have believed it was historically inaccurate. For instance, in an early version of the script, they had gladiators doing ads in the arena, like endorsing products. And that is actually historically accurate.
Really?
Yeah. But we would have been what
do they think this is, TikTok? What would they advertise? Like, "Hey, come and buy this like cloth thing that..."
Exactly.
Was there back then that you could show? "Hey, look at this spear that you could jab into someone's throat."
Okay, we know from excavating, starts with a P, volcano place.
Pompeii. There's actually a great song that I really love that I have it on my Spotify list called "Above the Clouds of Pompeii."
It's Pompeii.
It's by Bear Denz or something like that. But it's a really good song. But anyways.
Okay, anyways. They excavated Pompeii, and they have all of these beautiful advertisements on walls. Like, they had cafes, they had brothels, they had clothing shops. Like, they had a lot.
You're saying that we really haven't gotten that much more intelligent. We just
I'm saying we haven't changed. They had apartment buildings.
Well, I know. Like we, I mean, that's just that's crazy. I didn't. You wouldn't think like you think. Oh, we were the inventors of advertisement. Nah.
No.
I mean, this happened thousands of years ago.
Right. Like imagine Maximus finishing the fight, and you know, stabs a man to death, pulls the sword out, and he says, "My clothes are now dirty. But if you need a new change of clothes, go down to Swanky Clothes on Via Dolorosa."
Hey, look at this washer machine. Not like the ones that we have, but it's like, you know, a brick washer machine where you like turn it or something. And it's hey, buy this thing from, you know, washer machines down the street, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, get cleaned up because after you slit that guy's throat, like, you want a nice set of jammies for bed.
Murder and mayhem followed by advertising. Just like today.
That's crazy. All right, so my next fun fact is the ending was originally very different. So the film ends with Jubba bearing the figurines of...
Jubba?
J-U-B-A, the African-American guy
at
the
end. Oh, okay.
Yeah. He also plays in Never Back Down, which is a really good movie. It's one of those movies. Do you know the movies where you can just like rewatch over and over again and not get tired of it? It's just, it's kind of one of those that you have on in the background and you kind of, you know, you just like to watch it. But anyways, he plays one of the fighters or the trainers in that movie. But so he buries the figurines of Maximus' family in the Colosseum before heading back to his family in Africa. Originally, though, before the death of Oliver Reed, which I think played, I don't know.
Proximo.
Proximo.
Which, bonus fact, Proximo, so he's the owner of the Gladiators.
Okay.
He's the slaveholder.
Right.
And he was meant to survive in the original story, but he died before filming was completed.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
Oh, so that's why they killed him in the back and didn't show his face?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, I was wondering why that was kind of a weird scene. I was like, wow, that guy died in that movie.
Yeah.
Or died before the movie was out, so anyways. So before... So it was supposed to be Proximo bearing the figures in the sand. But also Maximus didn't die in the original versions of the script, and Scott and Crow changed it on the set. And Crow later said, "I remember Ridley coming up to me on set saying, 'Look, the way this is shaping up, I don't see how you live. The character is about one act of pure vengeance for his wife and child. And once he's accomplished that, what does he do?' And he, I'm going to just say this, family for, you know, because it's a family podcast or PG podcast, but it's, does he end up running an effing pizzeria by the Colosseum? It's like, what is he going to do after he survives and kills Commodus? You know, like, is he going to...
I like that. He's running a pizzeria.
Hey, get your pizza here. Got another advertisement for you. I was like one of the gladiators that killed the emperor. Now come get your pizza.
My heart is broken, but I heal every other heart with a slice of my pizza.
I mean, I guess if he survived, he could have been emperor... And then, you know, married the emperor's sister, and then they had kids, and then they changed Rome into a democracy. I guess he could have ended it like that, but wouldn't have been as cool.
It's a little too satisfying.
Yeah. Anyways, my extra fun fact is, so when, you know, when the gladiators are about to die, one of them's like in victory, the other one's, basically defeated, and the emperor... gives a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Well, the thumbs up in the movie meant basically thumbs up is you live and thumbs down is you die. That's right. In the movie. However, in those times, actually thumbs up meant die and thumbs up and thumbs down meant live. So they did this so audiences wouldn't get confused, since we know thumbs up is good and thumbs down is bad. And yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. And this, and it kind of like thinking about that, this is why there are a little bit different Bible translations for, you know, people are like, well, you know, why are there so many? And this is kind of one of those reasons, is because while we're getting into different times and different culture, not that, you know, it changes morally or anything like that, but, you know, there are some things, you know, say like cubics, you know, they worked with cubic square feet or whatever in the Bible. Well, there are some translations that say, you know, 5 feet and 6 inches in diameter or something, right? Like it helps us, you know, picture it better rather than like, oh, I don't know what that means. So
that's funny that you picked the one example that I do mind when it's translated into American standard, because a lot of the times numbers are meaningful in Hebrew. So
if you change it to a different,
then it doesn't make sense because the numbers are symbolic, not literal. So I think it's helpful if you're talking about like the height of Goliath, but if you're talking about the measurements of the temple in the New Jerusalem, you need to leave it the way it was written because it's symbolic.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that.
You're welcome.
All right. So now we're going to get into our scenes and themes of the show. So Bethany, start us off with your first scene. I'm really excited because apparently I just picked the scenes that were in the first 10 minutes of the movie. More like the first hour, but you know.
Stay with me. If you find yourself alone, riding in the green fields with the sun on your face, do not be troubled, for you are in Elysium and you're already dead.
Wow. What a great speech.
That's a great speech.
That, you know what? I should just wake up to that every morning when I get up out of bed, go to work and be like, you're already dead. Just go and do some more work.
No, I think it was inspirational. This is what Maximus says to his troops as they're riding into the battle at the beginning of the film.
Oh, so you get on my case for picking scenes at the beginning of the film, but you picked an even earlier one than I did.
Ha 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 ha. I do what I want.
Okay, go. Agent. All right, so.
And I think it's great and inspirational. And I would fight with Maximus after a speech like that, because he's like, you know, stay with me. Like, I've got your back. And if you die, oh, well, like, then you are in heaven. And that's great.
All right. Is that all you got?
Yeah.
All right. So I really like the scene where Commodus, tomato, tomato. I really like it when he's talking to his father before he kills him, that is, because I was evaluating this scene because we were coming off from a few weeks ago of Vertigo, and where we had the character Jimmy Stewart, Scotty, like this gal, and this gal mentions, like, you know, if I do all these things, will you love me? And then here in The Gladiator, Commodus says, if you loved me, I would have killed all the time for you, basically what he says. Like, if you loved me, father, I would, like, go to the ends of the earth for you. I thought that was interesting in comparison, because I don't think he was saying the same thing as what we were evaluating in Vertigo a couple weeks ago, where Judy is like, if I do all these things, will you love me? Commodus is saying, you know, if you loved me, I would do all these things. And it just kind of reminds me again, and obviously it's a little bit weird because, you know, it's in the context of Commodus. Basically saying, you know, I'll kill, you know, I would have killed if you loved me. And it's not a clear, like, parallel to us as followers of Jesus, but it, you know, I look at that and I'm like, okay, there's something true about that, because I see God's love for me, for you, for humanity. And I just look and I say, okay, I want, because God loves me, you know, I will follow him. Mm. You know, obviously he doesn't command me to kill or do any horrible things like, you know, this guy thinks, but it's just kind of in the same perspective of like, God loves me. Okay. I'm going to follow him to the, you know, obviously the best of my abilities. And I don't know, that's just my thoughts. Did you have any thoughts before we go on to your next scene?
My next scene is also about Commodus.
Commodus.
It's not Commodus. I found it really hard to watch all of the scenes with Commodus and his sister.
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
Like, it was a lot creepy.
I mean, the dude, I mean, oh gosh, that was borderline incest. I mean, they didn't.
It was any... well, no, it, yeah, it was incest. But one scene did really stick out to me as maybe a little bit of a thinker, and it's the one where he backs his sister into a corner, basically, because he tells her, "You got to love me, or I'll kill your son," and she's really stuck behind between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. And you can see that conflict in her. She knows there's no way out. Either she's going to lose her son, or she's figuratively going to lose her whole life. Mm-hmm. And that forces her into this desperate place of action. And that's when she decides to make these big moves to try and free Maximus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so she's freeing Maximus so that he could go and kill him, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. She wants him to be the leader. She knows that,
right?
You know, Marcus Aurelius wanted him to be Caesar.
Yeah, for sure. It's too bad about like that father. You see, that's the other plot hole. It's like the father knew that his son was a scumbag. That's why he didn't like give him the thing. He wanted Maximus to have the title. And you freaking tell him alone that you're giving it to Maximus, knowing your son's a dirtbag. Like, it's just, at least, you know what I'm saying? At least announce something to a lot of the people, the higher ups, saying, hey, listen, I'm not making my son Caesar. I want to make Maximus, but he says no. So that way, if, you know, Commodus kills the dad.
Commodus
kills the dad. People will be like, yeah, we're not going to make you Caesar because he already announced it. We're going to find somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Well, historically, they actually ruled together for 3 years. So he must have thought a little bit highly of him. And historically, Marcus Aurelius died of the plague, I believe.
Yeah, well, this isn't historically. This is in the movie. I'm strictly going off the movie. I'm just saying... The dad wasn't wise.
Don't you think
wise.
That dads tend to try and think the best of their children?
Yeah, well, he did a poor job with it because he just missed the mark. Because then he died, and then Maximus's wife and kid got killed by a Commodus.
Commodus.
I know. It's Commodus to me because he's a dirtbag.
Driving me crazy.
Anyways, so the next scene that I got is Maximus offers Maximus the position of Caesar. Hold on here. Oh, yeah. Wait. No. What reminds me of prop? Oh, okay. So, yeah, I was just making sure that I didn't already just say this. So... Maximus offers Maximus the position. What?
Maximus offers Maximus the position?
Yeah, isn't that how that works? What? What is so
Maximus? Fun? Who's that?
Isn't that the father? I'm pretty sure that
Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, really? I got that screwed that one up. Marcus Aurelius, the father Caesar, offers Maximus the position of Caesar.
He's like Karl Marx to the max. Karl Maximus. I'm sorry. Oh. You can talk now.
Max Aurelius.
No.
See, this is the problem with these kind of movies. Like, I can't pronounce Jack.
This is a normal name. Marcus. Like Mark. Marcus Aurelius.
Marcus Aurelius.
You could just call him Marcus. How about that?
Oh, okay. Oh, so wait. Hold on. So Maximus. So this is the Maximus guy. Gladiator dude. With his whole heart says no to the position. And Marcus Aurelius says that is why you must take it. And then Marcus Aurelius, he wanted the power of time to go back. He wanted all that power to go back to the people. Basically, he wanted to make it a democracy. And just his reasoning for choosing Maximus kind of reminded me of God choosing like prophets or Abraham or, you know, John the Baptist in the Bible, is because God chose these people because he knew that they were weak and unable to do it and actually didn't even really want it. Like a lot of the prophets in the Old Testament were like, say, for example, Moses. Moses is a famous one. He's like, listen, you don't want to send me, Lord. Like, I can't speak. And there's other prophets, like Isaiah said I couldn't speak, or Jeremiah. And then he had John the Baptist, who was like, you know, I'm just a guy unworthy to untie Jesus's sandals. Like a lot of these guys that we see in the Old Testament and the New, they're really chosen because they were weak and they didn't want the status of what was being given to them. Moses didn't want it. All the Jonah was, well, Jonah was a rebellious prophet, but a lot of them didn't want that status. And I think one of the reasons why, God chooses all of them is because he knew that they would point people back to God. It wouldn't be about them, but it would be about God. And that's one of the reasons why Marcus Aurelius wanted Maximus to be there, because he knew he wouldn't be about himself. He'd want all the people to have like a democracy and to be free. And yeah, I thought that was a great parallel between that and then what we see in scripture.
That's really good. That actually plays really well into the theme I wanted to talk about, which was strength and honor.
That was also an improv line. Strength and honor.
Right. Yeah. Crow actually based that off of the motto of his high school.
What were they, the Warriors or something in high school?
No. Their motto was truth and virtue.
Oh, okay.
So he was thinking about it and he was like, strength and honor. And Maximus is deeply committed to his duty to Rome. He is driven by honor, by rightness, and he fights for what he believes is right, even when it goes against his own personal desires. Right? Strength and honor, those are his core beliefs. And I was thinking about, like, are those two words that Christians can use, strength and honor? And I think if we had two words that would be our rallying cry, it would be cluelessness and humility. It's fair though, right? Like, one of my favorite stories.
I think that's going to be the quote that goes into the title. The Gladiator, cluelessness and humility.
Yeah. So I love the story in 2 Chronicles 20, where there are three kingdoms coming to attack the kingdom of Judah. And the king's prayer is, God, please help us because we are powerless. We don't know what to do, but our eyes are on you. And then God's answer is, you stand firm and watch me. I'm going to take care of this. And he does. And like, as much honor is a great virtue, we should honor one another, right? That's a command.
Yeah, honor your parent, your father and mother. Yep.
And honor one another. is somewhere in the New Testament. Anyway, but those who trust in the strength of horses.
Oh, and chariots.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, that's in the Psalms, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some may trust in horses, some may trust in chariots, but we will trust in the name of our Lord. We're not trusting in our own strength.
Yeah.
So we really do need to be clueless and humble. Well, we don't need to be clueless. We just are.
Right. I mean, it's good to be discerning, but also to know that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
And to just put your trust and faith in the Lord. Like, for example, in my Bible study this week, we're going over Romans 1, and we were talking about, you know, what happens to people who have never heard the gospel. And we talked a little bit about, you know, the different sides. And at a certain point, we have to say, we honestly don't know what happens to, you know, people after they die who've never heard of the gospel.
Yeah.
You know, we have to, in some ways, trust God is just and he's good, and he will make the right call on those situations. But, you know, we who have knowledge of Jesus, we just need to follow him and, you know, walk with him in this life and show people the love of Jesus as best as we can, and just leave all these unexplained answers that we don't have, even in scripture, just leave it and trust it in God's hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all you can do. And with our lives, like, if we were to be humble and admit it, we're pretty clueless about what we're doing any day of the week.
Yeah. I know I get clueless a lot. I make some stupid mistakes over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So the best we can do is be obedient and trust.
Yeah.
Trust and obey. Well, and
that old hymn song?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to that one scripture that says, it's like, in our weakness, we will find strength in the Lord, or something like that. I can't remember the exact scripture on the top of my head, but it's like, in our weakness, we find strength, because when we are weak, we solely and utterly depend on God to come through.
Yeah.
I think that's why sometimes people wonder, oh, why does God allow suffering? And truth be told, like, maybe it's in some ways so that we can look to the one who made us, you know, like, because sometimes if everything is going like perfectly right, we don't really look to God. We look to, hey, what's in front of us. You're making a face. You always make a face, and like, this is a face of like, I don't agree with you.
Stop reading me.
I'm reading you. Well,
I was trying to decide whether to bring it up because I feel like it's a big discussion. But I don't like the idea of God allows suffering to bring us closer to him. Sheila Walsh used to tell a story about how shepherds, and I think this is made up too.
Okay.
Shepherds will take disobedient lambs and break their legs.
So that they won't like go back or wander off.
So that they'll bond with the shepherd, because the shepherd will have to carry them around for a while. And she compared that to God allowing suffering in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea has always bothered me. And now I think, I don't believe that God does that. I don't believe God's like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because God says he's a good father.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't imagine, as a good parent, deliberately putting something in the way of your child so that they get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine things being in the way and they do get hurt. Like, I remember once I let Carver, I didn't let him, Carver touched the stove.
Right.
When it was hot, the wood stove, and he never did it again.
But wouldn't you say you allowed that?
No, I didn't allow it.
Well, you let it happen. So when
I couldn't stop him.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't listening to me.
Right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. But if I had been like, hey, here's this wood stove, come touch it, or just put it in front of him, I think that would have made me evil.
Right.
No, and God is not evil.
Right.
I think evil is a fact of life. I think it is a reality.
It's a result of the fall.
I think we are surrounded by evil beings who mean us harm, and there is natural decay, and sometimes bad things happen because of those. I don't think it's a matter of God making our suffering happen. I think he just doesn't constantly intervene because that would be bonkers.
Right. But what about like in the Old Testament where, you know, the Israelites do something wrong and then God brings judgment on them? Like he's actively, you know, doing that. Because we're in the Old Testament in our chronological Bibles. And like, I can't say that he's never, you know, intervene, and all of this stuff is just coincidence. So, I mean, he does discipline us. And so sometimes when we as children, I don't know, like stray and wander, you know, maybe he does intervene to some extent so that we can get our eyes back on him.
Right. You know, in my mind, like when the Israelites get punished for doing things, a lot of the times he's removing his blessing. Like they were, God intervened a lot for them.
Yeah, for sure. Gave them manna,
gave them out food, gave them water, kept them safe from their enemies, gave them victory over enemies that were much more powerful than they were. So if they stopped following him, they stopped listening to him.
Then he removed the blessing and then.
Yeah, he just stopped saving him.
Right.
Boom.
Boom. Yeah, I mean it's just a hard one, like suffering in this life. I mean, it's not an easy answer. I was actually just listening to the Marty Solomon and the Bema podcast on the one episode of Job.
Yeah.
And how like we often look at that as, you know, it's a book about suffering, but it's more it, like what he was saying. And I mean, it is a book about suffering, but it's also a book about perspective. And he was talking about how at the end, like Job never found out of why all the things were happening to him.
Exactly.
You know, it was just like he had to trust in God and who he was, even if he didn't get the answer.
And
about his suffering.
I'm surprised. I feel like we've talked about this before on the podcast, but in the very beginning, because we know the background of what's going on, you know, we get to see that God and the devil are talking to each other. We know that the devil is the source of Job's troubles. But when they start happening, Job, who has not seen that whole scene that we got to, he says, "The Lord has given and the Lord has taken away."
Right. And
That's not true.
That's not true.
It wasn't the Lord.
From his perspective, he thought it was. Because in those times, if you did something bad, well, then God removed his blessing, like we were just saying, and stuff would happen to you.
Right. And so I think the rest of Job is him struggling with the idea that...
And he was a righteous man. I mean, that's one of the reasons why God was like, "Hey, have you considered my servant Job? Like, he's a righteous dude. He's not going to go... fear away from me."
Right. I think the rest of the book of Job is Job struggling with that idea that God took this away from him for no reason. He just decided that Job's his enemy. Like, Job is justly outraged.
Yeah.
Like, what did he do? Yeah. That's what he's saying the whole book. What did I do to deserve this?
"I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then shall I look upon a woman and lust after her? I have not even done that, Lord." And you're, you know.
Yeah.
Which, hey, Job, it's kind of easy to do it in those day and age. You know, you didn't have an iPhone or anything like that. No.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty common to believe that God allows suffering. But this is still a philosophy I'm working on. And I just, don't think that is quite right.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's hard because I can kind of see it on both ends. And yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, we have to struggle in this life. Like, there is suffering and there is a good God. And, you know, why are we dealing with it? And so, yeah. So my next theme, and this doesn't really go into what we were just talking about, like you did with ahead. The going from the scenes to the themes. That's but okay. My other theme, my first theme was vengeance. And we've talked about Romans 12 before, where Christians are called to leave vengeance or the wrath of God on evil people. Like I'm not called to, you know, go take out my revenge on people. But part of me is a little bit torn on this, because on the one hand, in this situation that Maximus is dealing with, he's dealing with a dictator. Basically, this guy has no authority to tell. I mean, it's not like our government system of where there's all these different
checks
and balances. Like, obviously, we can't have the president do whatever he wants. He's not a dictator. Like, he can maybe legislate some things, like stupid tariffs, but not to get political or anything here. But, you know, he can't just, like, do whatever he wants. Like, there are these systems in place to keep him from doing that. Whereas in this society of where Maximus is in, Caesar does what Caesar wants to do. And if Caesar is downright evil dude who wants to murder this guy's family or, you know, whatever, he can do that. And he has no consequences for it. And so part of me is like, as Christians, like, and this is, you know, Paul's saying this in Romans 12, in this kind of society, which is bonkers to me. And but so I'm kind of like struggling with is like, I don't think Maximus was a Christian or anything, because he was bowing down to wooden idols throughout the film. But if Maximus was a Christian, would have this been okay? And then part of me thinks, well, you know, we look at Bonhoeffer, who I mentioned earlier, who was trying to assassinate Hitler in the Nazi Germany, and he was a Christian, you know? So it's like he was taking out vengeance. So, you know, do you understand where I'm coming from? It's like, where's that line of, okay, you have this dictator like Commodus or Hitler, like, do you follow Romans 12 and be like, well, let's just leave it to the wrath of God? Or do you go the Romans 13 route and be like, well, God has ordained authorities to step in and enact upon evil? You know, obviously there's the, you know, what's it called when like someone murders somebody and then they get, is it capital punishment?
Yeah.
You know, so obviously that's authorities taken upon themselves to kill a person who is being condemned as a murderer, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously humans play a part in that, and God ordained that to happen.
Right.
But in this scenario, like, would it be right for Maximus or, say, a Bonhoeffer to do this? And I think it would be just, because there's no authority in place to, you know.
Well, I think that's the word. Is it's not vengeance at that point. It is justice. Nobody was going to hold Commodus accountable for what he had done, and that what he was continuing to do. Just like nobody was holding Hitler accountable for the things he had done.
He just was like, yeah, let's just kill millions of Jews.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't revenge. It was
justice.
Trying to enact justice.
And that's what Romans 13 is. Like, it's a, you know, you want justice.
Yeah.
It's not vengeance. It's not like someone cut me off in traffic and now I'm like, oh, I'm pissed off at this guy. I'm going to go road rage like Russell Crowe and what was it?
It's road rage.
Road rage, yeah.
Nice. Well, you know, the best revenge is to be unlike him who performed the injury. You want to know who said that?
No, and I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to say.
The best revenge is to not be like the person who hurt you.
Oh, like be totally different.
Yeah.
Like forgiving.
Yeah.
Like Jesus-like.
Yeah.
Or the Romans were like, hey, we're going to crucify you on a cross. And Jesus is like, oh, yeah.
You want to know who said that?
Mother Teresa.
Marcus Aurelius, the real one.
Really?
Yep.
So he was actually kind of good? Well,
he was a bit of a philosopher. He wrote a book.
I wonder what a book sounds like in those day and ages. You know what I'm saying? I've read like stuff from the 1500s before. And I'm like, I hate this because the language has changed so much and it's like, it's just hard to read.
Yeah, I guess you would want a very modern translation.
Right. Like Pilgrim's Progress, great book. It's really good. If there was one book that was translated in modern English and it's so much better. So much better than like reading it from 500 years ago.
That's fair.
Anyway, so yeah, that was kind of one of my themes. What was another one of yours?
One of mine was The Allure of Home.
Oh, okay. Can you go into that a little bit?
Okay, so you were talking earlier about how Maximus turned down a position of power because he just wanted to be home.
Just wanted to be home.
He just wants to go home.
I want
to
go home. Gee, he was Sandy in SpongeBob. I want to go home. I want to go home.
That's exactly right. Now, it's like all he really talks about through the movie. And when at the final scene he dies and he is in Elysium, we see that he's home. He's finally home. And so here's two verses, and then I just want to talk about something else.
Okay.
John 15:9 from the Message says, I've loved you the way my Father has loved me. Make yourselves at home in my love. And then John 14:2 says, there are many rooms in my Father's house. I wouldn't tell you this unless it was true. I'm going there to prepare a place for each of you. After I've done this, I will come back and take you with me. Then we'll be together. I think we have a built-in spot in our hearts that craves home and craves a true home, right? Not just a house where we live, but a home where we are secure and loved. And that's what Adonai offers. And I think about how you and I have built our home together, and we have some rules about our home that we don't talk about much. It's just something that at some point, like we decided on together, and now it's just our way of being. And one of them is, our home is our castle.
Yeah, and we also say we don't bring chaos into this home.
Yeah, like, we do not run a ministry in our home. This is where we're safe.
I mean, we'll invite people over that we love and respect, but
and trust.
Know, in trust, but we're not. Yeah, we have boundaries with people because we do not make this a chaotic home.
Yeah, because you have to have at least one truly safe place in your life.
Yeah, you do.
And this is our safe place.
Right.
And
I mean, obviously we can't make this heaven or anything or, you know, one of the rooms in Jesus's mansion in heaven. But, you know, dadgummit, we can try to make it as close as possible.
Yeah, we can. That's what it means, bringing the kingdom to earth. And I think about what that means for our future home and with God. It must be the safest place.
Gosh, I can't wait. Like, no more sin. Like, no more selfishness, no more pride. Like, you know what I'm saying? It just, it sounds so wonderful to be in a place where, you know, like, for me, for example, like, sometimes it's just like, I can get so prideful and selfish, and I'm like, man, I cannot wait to be in heaven and not have that anymore. I can't wait to be in heaven and not be pissed off or worried about finances. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, just kind of stuff like that.
I had a brief thought about what would be really cool about heaven. And it was when I was at Walmart in the pickup line waiting for my groceries. And I saw this older couple getting into a car. And for a brief second, I was excited because I thought they were some friends of ours. And then I remembered that those friends are dead. But
an older couple?
Yeah, it was an older couple.
No. Oh. Well, then
one of them's dead. And so I thought about how cool will it be in heaven to just have the constant reunions, to be taking a walk, and there they are, and oh my gosh, you're here. Like, how fun would that be?
Yeah. You know, you want to know something that I've been thinking about since I've been listening to my cult podcast, my Church Scandals podcast?
Yeah.
Like, so this is just strictly going for like believers and stuff who believe in Jesus. There are Christians that I widely disagree with on X amount of issues, secondary issues in the church. And some of them, I like, honestly, like this one week or this last week or this last 2 weeks, I've learned this one preacher dude that I respected listening to in college. And he talked about women who were being abused by their husbands in their marriage. And he talked a couple minutes about, you know, how they should act. And it was just horrendous. And like, seriously, it was very dangerous advice because it had that male headship kind of authoritarianism kind of thing. And I really respected this dude. And there's other Christians that have this kind of mindset, or other Christians that have just done stupid things. And I'm sitting here wondering, how am I going to get along with these people in heaven? You know what I'm saying? Like, there are people in our church that I'm just like, oh. You know, like, not everyone. I mean, there's just, you know, there's some people that it just kind of rubs you the wrong way. Right. They're believers, but they just rub you the wrong way.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, man, how's this going to work with all these different denominations in Christianity that have different views and who right now are bickering with one another? You know what I'm saying? With the with all this stuff, like, how is it going to work? And that's one of the things that just kind of blows my mind is, you know, when we get to heaven, there's going to be a John MacArthur and a Beth Moore. You know what I'm saying? Like, how's that going to work? Like, you know what I'm saying?
If you, like, have you Jesus literally there as your mediator, I think it's going to work
out. I know. It blows my mind. And, you know, I think there's just going to be a lot of, I don't know.
Do you think we'll continue to transform?
Well, it does say in Revelation that he's going to wipe the tears away. So there are, at first, there's going to be tears in heaven because it said he's going to wipe away every tear, which means there's going to be kind of a part of a transformation in my mind. I mean, we're not just going to get there and be like, so, hey, how's it going, guys? Yeah, I know we were like fighting over like social media and crap, and I like talked crap about you in Twitter, but yeah, we're all good. Like, I don't think it's, you know, my personal opinion, I don't think it's going to be quite like that at first. I think there's, I don't know. We don't know all the ins and outs and the details of what's going to happen in heaven.
I do like the idea that it's a process. I like the idea that you get to the gates of heaven and you come in and Jesus himself is there to greet you. And he's like, oh, come in, I made you dinner. And he lets you eat. And then he's like, so tell me about all those things that you've wanted to. And you start talking and you start crying and he's sitting there with you wiping away every tear. Like, I just really like the idea that it's not just in an instant, like all of your cares are wiped away, because then it feels like they didn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, and I think everything matters.
Everything does matter. And I think there is going to be a transformation progress in heaven. Like, we will eventually all be, you know, for believers in Jesus, we all be eventually transformed and like really made whole, where there's no more crying or weeping. But I think there will be a transformation in heaven that happens over a period of time. How long? I don't know. It doesn't say. I may even be wrong on the issue. La, but, na, na,
na 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 le no ho na hedo gato ko le no ho nonda. It's Elysium from Braveheart soundtrack. Gladiator.
I've seen that once 10 years
Gladiator ago. Soundtrack. The movie we just watched. Okay, I said Braveheart. Okay. I get them mixed up.
Anyways, so my last theme is serving men versus serving God. And Galatians 1:10 says this, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I was still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." And the reason why I bring this up is serving under man always changes. Like, you work at a job and you get a new supervisor, things are going to change. It changed for the Israelites in Egypt when Joseph was under this one pharaoh. The pharaoh died, and then this new pharaoh came and enslaved the Egyptians. You know, you have pastors, they come in and they have different, different methods in how to run the church. And then, you know, in this movie, we have two different Caesars, at least the one at the very end of his life before he got killed by his son, wanted to change things to it being a more democratizing society. Boy, that's
democratic
society. And you had the other, you know, soon to be Caesar, who just wanted to be a dictator. And this is one of those beautiful things that I love about God, is that he never changes. And that's not to say that God doesn't change his mind, because we do see in scripture that he does change his mind with Moses pleading before God not to kill the Israelites for their sin, or the woman who was begging to the judge in the Gospels. So we do see God change his mind, but he never changes his character. He never changes who he is. And one of the things that I noticed is that the gladiator Maximus was constantly worshiping these like little idol statues. And I actually looked at it and I did a brief Google search. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but AI Google said that the people in those times worshipped Mars, which was the god of war, and Venus, the god of beauty. And here's the thing, is like, when you're worshiping multiple gods, these multiple gods contradict one another. One is going to be like, I'm a god of war. The other one's going to be, I'm a god of beauty. The other one's going to be, I'm a god of peace. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to have all these different things about these different gods, and they're all going to contradict with one another. That's why that the God of the Bible is so astounding, is because in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that there were people that believed that the world came into existence with the chaos of all these different gods fighting in a battle with war.
Yeah.
And it's like, that doesn't make any sense, because war only destroys. It doesn't create beauty. I mean, we looked at the first scene in this movie, and they're battling, and things were on fire. People were dead. Like, that doesn't create. Go out to nature. Go out to the in Montana and go to the Glacier National Park. That doesn't happen out of war. You know,
this has me thinking deep now, because in Genesis, when it says that there was nothing, the word in Hebrew kind of implies chaotic nothing.
Mm.
And the Hebrews have a lot of stories about sea monsters and that sort of thing that existed in the chaotic nothing. So I'm kind of intrigued now at the thought that the earth was a place of chaos and all these little gods fighting, and God spoke into it and created something beautiful because he is the God of gods.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how that works, but anyways, he creates order. Like, everything that we see, I mean, is order. I mean, look at your bodies. I mean, that can't
be... Okay.
All right there. And so what I love is that God is really good to us and saying, "Hey, just worship me." you know, because all these different gods are going to say different things and they're going to contradict one another and you're going to be pulled from one end to this end and back and all.
Well, Mars and Venus and all of them, they were always fighting.
Yeah.
According to their own religion, like they're always at war with each other.
Right. That's what I'm saying is like you're going to be at different ends with these different gods. And if you're on my side, the creator of the universe, like that's a pretty good place to be because I don't contradict myself. Yeah, there are things in scripture that are hard to understand and to wrap our minds around. And we, you know, like what you're struggling with does God allow suffering? And, you know, Christians have different views on that. But it's really amazing that God just says, hey, first commandment, have no other gods before me. And he says, just worship me. That is so amazing that I don't have to, you know, please this God or this God or this God, or to please this God, I have to not please this God. You know what I'm saying? That would suck.
Yeah.
It would be like having two parents and one says this and the other says this. And if you do this, the other parent gets pissed off. And then if you do this for this parent, that other parent gets pissed off. Like
exhausting.
Yeah, it's exhausting. You can't win. But, you know, if you have a God that says, hey, this is how it is, like, hey, here's my 10 commandments. Boom. Mm. Like follow those and you're going to do well. And the thing is we can't follow those. We actually have broken those and we become slaves to sin. And towards the end of this movie is what I really love. I think this was a really Jesus-like thing, but Maximus kills Commodus. You know, and he frees the people. He frees the gladiator. He frees, you know, the people of Rome. And in the same way, when Jesus went to the cross, he fought sin. He fought, you know, Satan, so to speak. And he freed people to be free from their sin. Now, some people don't want to be free from the sin. Some people just want to live and do their own thing. But other people see that freedom and say, I want to follow Jesus. I want to give my life because he freed me from, you know, myself, basically, if that makes sense.
Look me in the eyes.
I don't know. Yeah. What?
I want you to repeat after me.
Commodus. Yeah, that one Skillet song. Commodus.
It's a lost cause.
Anyways, well, that's going to do it for today. Jeremy, hopefully you love this. Hey, you know what? If you stuck to it at the end, let me know. And the only reason I'll know if you have stuck to the end is by me saying this number, 447. If you tell me that, I'll know that you stuck to the end of this. If you don't tell me that, then I know that you didn't listen to this. I'm just saying.
Secret code.
Well, you know, sometimes like people say stuff so generically that.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, like.
I don't think you listened then.
Like, I mean, not to get on Mark's case, but he didn't really. I mean, he just said some generic things about, you know, the Vertigo podcast. I'm like, whoa, that was really nice. But like, what are some specific things? I know he listened, but still, I want specifics, people. What really did you like about the podcast? Because the whole...
What did you hate entirely?
Or even what you hate or what you disagreed with. I don't know. I don't care. If you hated it, you hated it. Like, but at least you listened to it.
So if Jeremy comes up to you and he says 447, what does he get?
Good job, bud. Thanks for listening.
Wow, not much of a reward.
I'll give you an energy drink. How about that? I will give you an energy drink if you tell me 447. Any energy drink at the marketplace in SEL, I will do that. And that's how I know you have listened all the way to the end. So anyways,
I approve this transaction.
All right.
Anyways.
So next movie we are going to be going over Gladiator 2.
I'm a little worried.
Oh, what do you think the chances are that this will be just as good, if not better, than the first Gladiator?
Zero.
Do you think it'll be better than Captain America: Boring New World?
Yes.
I think
but
so,
that's a pretty extreme scale right there. Everything falls in between those two.
Well, it should be fun. Yeah, we're gonna go watch it after this, and
we'll see.
Yeah. All right, guys. All right, remember, Jeremy, you get an energy drink, you tell me 447. Anyways, thank you guys for listening.
And like my buddy Marcus Aurelius always says, the soul becomes dyed with the color of its thoughts.
I don't even know what that means. But like my friend Blaine always says, after we get done with the movies, don't party too hard without me.
What?
Catch you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.